big nuclear time bombs. Holy overeating. Holy roller coasters.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time for the Lion Sidekick Podcast.
Hey, 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 heroes. Welcome back for another episode of the YM Sidekick Podcast. This is where student and online ministers go to get some cool tips and tricks and ideas on how to do ministry more effectively in a very digital and online world. And I am really excited you're joining me today. This is the week in between Christmas and New Year's, and a lot of downtime, a lot of time to relax with friends and family while also gearing up for the new year. So it's a really great time of year. I love this week in between Christmas and New Year's, and I'm excited about my guest today. It's Ben Kearns. I brought him back on, and we're talking about something that I think is really critical in the mind of a student minister. All ministry positions are hard, obviously, but student ministry is one of those jobs where I feel like it is a thankless job because you don't always get to see the fruits of your labor until years later, actually. Because as Ben and I will get into the conversation, I've experienced tons of opportunities where I've invested countless hours with students, and they either walk away or they don't fully get it until years later when they have families of their own. But what Ben and I are going to be talking about is giving students the freedom to really explore their faith, knowing full well that they may not come back. And that's a hard concept for us to fully understand, but Ben really breaks it down because Ben blogged about this a few weeks ago. And so what we get to do is we break down his blog and talk about it a little bit deeper. So without any further ado, let's get into the conversation now with Ben Kearns. All right, with me right now is my friend, my California, I think one of my only few California friends, Ben Kearns. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Was that your Ric Flair woo kind of thing?
Yeah, Ric Flair. I love Ric Flair.
Yeah, did you watch wrestling when you were younger?
Of course. Okay, look at you. Yeah. You're dating us. That was back when wrestling was good.
Yeah, wrestling was good, dude. Ric Flair. In high school, I would watch a little bit, but not very much. I kind of weaned because I felt like the WWE was really kind of loserish at that point. But then when I went to college and Hulk Hogan became a bad guy on WCW and they created NWO and he was Hollywood Hogan, I was like, this is awesome. This is awesome.
Yeah, Ric Flair was like the original John Cena for the kids. That's how we'll bring it back around.
Yeah, that is true. So, Ben, what have you been up to, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. It's we're leaning into Christmas time. All your blog and podcast listeners, I'm hiring 2 youth staff. So if people want to come to California and get out of the awful East Coast winter, come to California and have your heart crushed by post-Christian youth ministry.
Wait, dude, but aren't you in the northern part of like California where you actually do get some snow or no?
It frosts like once a year here.
Okay, frosts once a year. Okay, that's good. That's right, because you still surf well into the fall and that stuff, right?
That's right.
See, that's a little insane. Yeah, okay, well, definitely. At the end, I'll ask you to kind of share a little bit about what you're hiring, and then we can ask people to do it. Not that, I mean, listen, the only people that's listening to this is my dad, you know, so I mean, this, you know, it's just going to my dad. He might apply for the job.
Nice. And my mom, so maybe they can get together.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That would be good. So, all right. Well, Ben, I wanted you on here because you did a blog post, and I've actually been trying to get you on for a few weeks now, but you're so busy, man. You got so much stuff going on.
That's right. Living large.
Living large. But right after Thanksgiving, you posted this, and I'm going to butcher the name, so you're going to have to correct my name, but you posted this thing called Our Own Rum Springa. Is that how you say it? Rum Springa?
I think so. I'm not Amish or German.
Okay.
So however you pronounce it's good with me.
See, and I'm going to be honest, not going to lie. What caught my attention was rum. And so I thought, is he writing about rum? This is awesome. I got to read this. So
not the picture of all these cool little Amish girls in their Amish getup drinking beer.
Well, that was cool too, but which is as I'm looking at it right now, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is quite impressive." So, well, Ben, tell me a little bit about this because I want this to be the center of our conversation today. What is this blog post about?
Well, in the Amish tradition, there's this thing called Rumspringa where you raise your kids in this totally, in my opinion, crushing cultural religious worldview. And if you're going to be Amish, you really have to give a lot. Like, it is a very intentional and brutal lifestyle, I think, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm not Amish. And they know that. And what they do is there's this moment where their kids are 16 or 18 or whatever, and they basically release them from the Amish community. They're like, all right, here's your time to, like, sow your wild oats, which culturally has been part of our culture forever, you know? Even in the Christian world, oh, people are going to go off and go crazy. Then they'll get married and have kids and come back. Like, it's part of our, like, unspoken DNA. But in the Amish world, it's like, nope, you're going to go out and sleep with as many people as possible and get hooked on meth and whatever. And so they go out. But then for those who return, it's like none of that's held against them. If they return, they've given up their former life. They've given up all that weird chaos in that season, and they're fully welcome back in the Amish community. And I don't even know if that's totally true. That's my, like, weird, limited understanding of a non-Amish person who's never even met an Amish person.
Yeah.
But I at least love the idea of recognizing that to be truly followers of Christ is a crushing thing. To go, I want Jesus to be my Lord. It does not jive with adolescent development in the slightest.
Yeah.
And instead of living in this false hope that a 17-year-old boy is going to be like, I don't want to sleep around and whack off to porn every day. I want to give my life to Jesus. Mm-hmm. I think does us a disservice. And I thought that was at least a helpful hook or paradigm to think about ministry.
Yeah, and you actually asked the question, like, what if we what if our students genuinely needed their own Rumspringa? And then you kind of broke down into four different things of four different areas of which they could kind of have a revelation of sorts that, you know, well, I'll break it down real quick of what you said. You said students need to develop a faith separate from their families. I think this is something that I've been taught a lot. I mean, and I'm assuming a lot of student and children and family ministers have been taught this as well. But dig into this a little bit of saying, what do you mean develop a faith separate of their families?
Yeah. You know, what I think is so funny is, so, I mean, this entire article comes out of everything I've ever learned from youth specialties, Chap Clark, Cara
Powell. Yes. Yes.
We just happen to have drawn totally different conclusions. Mm. So I took all of their preliminary research, I 100% agree with. All of their practical application, I like 12% agree with, I guess. but that's part of my contrariness. But everything that youth ministry professionals have said forever and ever, that whole idea of individuation. Yeah. Chap Clark does this great illustration of this tightrope of being a child and identifying with your parents and having to kind of move through adolescence and answer these three basic questions of who am I, do I matter, and where do I belong? Mm-hmm. And they have to answer those questions. And so they have to separate from their families in order to develop a true sense of self. And yet, I think in the same way, for the church of their faith, their parents' faith, it's their parents' church. It's their parents' faith. We in youth ministry are really an extension of children's ministry. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to somehow come up with a faith separate from that of their parents. And our youth ministry is the hub of their parents' faith. Yeah. So there's going to be some natural tension there, I think.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you on that. And they have to have the ability to think and to process information and to kind of really formally understand what their faith is about so that when they do, again, leave us as youth pastors, they're going to be able to say, hey, this is something I want or this is something I don't want. And again, which I think leads into your number two point where you say students need to identify what they actually believe. Talk into that a little bit.
Yeah. So what I think is really interesting is, you know, the modern evangelical movement is really only a couple generations old, you know, with the big revivals and Jesus movements of the 70s. Mm-hmm. And yet so the whole movement was this, you know, believers' baptism, this is like, right. And people making their faith their own and coming to Jesus and all that's really incredible. And then all those adults started having kids, but their whole paradigm is kids having to figure it out on their own.
Yep.
And yet they don't know what to do. And in all the mainliner churches, that's their whole DNA. Like a mainline church is that's why you have infant baptism and confirmation. Like it's a whole system designed of creating faith for the next generation and next generation. And the Amish are the same way. They have all these systems in place of helping kids make their faith their own. And so I think in the evangelical world, there has to be some acknowledgement of that these are kids. And so we do spiritual formation, but yet we have to also help them navigate the true questions and issues that come up if it's really going to be their own. And I feel like in most of our evangelical churches, we're not honest with that developmental process.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you said in here is that, you know, we don't give any space for disagreement. Now I'm taking that completely not out of context, but I'm just taking from a little bit of your segment here, but I think we have to give them a space to disagree. We have to give them, as you say, wrestle through the issues that you want them to wrestle through the issues of what they're going on. And you'd rather them do that, disagree as they're wrestling through it.
Yeah. I don't think most churches do this anymore, but I mean, we grew up in the era where you take a bunch of 11 and 12 year olds, take them to a, you know, wait till marriage conference and sign a purity pledge.
Yes.
And before they've even had puberty and want to like sleep around yet. And yeah. So, you know, so we've all the things that, all the complexities of faith, all the calls of discipleship, it's kind of a bait and switch. We send them to awesome camps and we make youth group epic. And then we say, be a follower of Christ. And we're pissed at them when they're not ready to be disciples of Christ yet.
Yeah.
And because that's a hard sell. And so I think we still love kids and do really great stuff, but we have to make space for them to, in the adolescent season, to go, man, this is discipleship. This is why the whole world aren't Christians. This is some things to think about. And yeah. I mean, there's lots of benefits, but there's a cost too. We've got to help kids consider that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And then as you kind of, I love how this works through on your blog post, but as you kind of give them that opportunity to wrestle with it and disagree and even agree with them, you're going to come to the point where, as you say in point number three, students may not want to be followers of Christ, that there's this that they may make the decision ultimately, at, you know, as a person to not follow Christ. But talk into that a little bit.
What I think is so interesting is, you know, as youth workers, we collect basically bored and lonely kids. And so they come to youth group and we feed them pizza and we have a good time. And we're an older adult who loves them. And so, of course, they love being around. Mm-hmm. But an affection, you know, loving people doesn't then may go, oh, therefore I want to pick up my cross and follow Christ. Like people actually don't want to become Christians. And we do ministry out of a paradigm that everyone's default is Christianity. When I think, right, the wide path is not Christianity. The narrow path is Christianity. So I think we scatter our seed broadly, but only some of it falls in good soil. Look at me getting all biblical.
Dude, you're doing great. But I can definitely relate to this, Ben, because, you know,
you've done this long enough, right? You've got to have people in your life who have, like, done the whole gamut.
Yeah, dude, I met a kid in sixth grade, and I ministered to him throughout. He was one of my kids in my small group. I spent a lot of time with this guy. And again, I knew he always wrestled with, you know, what it means to follow Christ. But I specifically remember this is one of the biggest heartbreaking things for me at that moment was that when he went off to college, we met up in August right before he went to college and we had some wings. And he specifically said, as I was trying to like say, dude, say all the good youth pastor stuff, hey, remember the first 10 days of your college career is going to define who you are, get involved with fellowship. He literally told me, I'm going to go drink my butt off. I'm going to join a fraternity and I'm going to try to get with as many girls as possible. Now, I'm glad he had felt the freedom that he knew me well enough that he could say that to me. But in the same light, it was crushing. I was like, this guy is choosing. He's choosing other things. He's not choosing Christ. And that crushed me for a really long time. Now, I will say that in the context of it is that now he's near his 30s. And he's a completely different person, but I stuck with him all along the way. I didn't drop him and say, well, see you later, sucker. You know,
right.
Have fun with that. I hope you don't get AIDS or anything like that, or a girl pregnant. But I stuck with him, and we still process life together. I mean, he's still wrestling with a lot of these issues that he was wrestling with back then, but I stuck with him. So talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're exactly right. I think very few people end up choosing to be followers of Christ. And I think, and especially in adolescent development, especially in college, they're going to go wild. They're going to have their Rumspringa. Yeah. I mean, I think it's unfair. I think youth ministry has got an unfair rap with all these statistics of people walking away from the church and then making a straw man out of youth ministry and then blaming youth ministry for it. I think there's a whole cultural trend and a whole developmental trend that of course they're going to walk away from the church.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to walk away from their faith. Of course they're going to walk away from their families. That's all normal. But I love what you said about your story with your buddy. But because you loved him, because you continually run after him, mm-hmm. the day that Jesus catches up with this kid is a man now, right? And goes, and let's say he has some sort of like warmness towards Christ and goes, I think I'm at this point in my life and I'm ready to figure out faith. Yeah. And you may be connected to him or not be connected to him, but when he looks back, he's not going to have a ton of baggage to get over. Oh, so God's doing this thing in me, but man, last time I was at church, they were total dicks to me. Or last time I was at church, they just judged the crap out of me. They're going to be able to look back and go, man, last time I was at church, that was like a home to me. Those guys loved me. They loved kids. When I have kids, I kind of want my kid to experience that. Like there's going to be a warmth there, which means they're going to be able to show up and show up without a chip on their shoulder, which is such a benefit. Because truthfully, any young family that shows up in any church, I don't care, from Westboro Baptist to the Unitarian Church, any young family is going to be so welcomed and so loved. And so if they don't have a chip on their shoulder and are looking for a fight, they're going to be warmly received, which means they're going to be ready to fully jump in.
Yeah.
But, and the cost is on us as the youth worker and our pride to just love generously and to remove as many obstacles for them down the road as possible, I think.
Yeah. And I love that. You're exactly right. Which again, as we kind of move through this, it leads into your last point of, you know, the students need to be released with a clear and open path to return. You can invest as much as you want in them. You need to take away all the obstacles, as you just said, for them to experience and discover who God is. But at the end of the day, as I just said with my friend, and I'm sure you've had experiences like this as well, because you're just as old as I am, Ben. But you know, you have to provide an open path for that person to return. And what does that look like, Ben? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's exactly what you did with that guy. Like, you sit down, you disciple him, you help clarify what it means to be faithful, what it means to be a Christian. And you genuinely love him and are interested in his life and care for him and are available to him or her, you know, like that you make space.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference. We don't have to like give up what we believe, but there's a way to say, hey man, this is kind of these are our hopes of what you do in college. And whether you're a Christian or you just don't want to get an STD, these are things that you got to, these are our hopes.
Yeah.
That's different than going, and if you do, you're going to be forever unclean. And we nurse.
unclean.
And no one ever says that, but you know, but how we live and how we treat them, how our faces are.
Yeah.
People know exactly when they're living outside the bounds.
Yeah.
And we just have to go, man, no matter who you are, no matter where you're at, no matter how you live, that's the case. And I think actually youth ministry people do it. I mean, it's in our DNA to love the snot out of kids. I think most youth ministries do that really well now. I just think as we just have to own our own garbage so that in the heartbreak of it, we end up not drawing a red line or ultimatum or ruining, you know, 7 years of investment because we're freaking out for one moment, you know?
Yeah, and it's a thing to, like, not take it personally either. They're not abandoning you or Tom Pounder or Ben Kearns. They're not abandoning you. They're choosing not to follow Christ. So that means that they still love you. They still respect you as a person, especially depending on how you treat them. But, you know, you are that opportunity for them to help continue to discover who God is and experience God. And again, I say this all the time, but I think one of the biggest things that helped me define whether or not I was successful in student ministry was that years later, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, after they graduate, they still are in connection with me, especially when they encounter those hard times and say, Tom, I just got divorced, or I just got a girl pregnant. What do I do? They're calling me. They can call a whole bunch of people, but they're calling me, and they're helping, and I'm helping them process life through it. And so I think that that is a real key indicator of whether or not you're successful or not in ministry. So,
yeah, in like all of life, I mean, those of us in ministry leadership, we got to own our own junk, and we got to understand what's going on, and not put our own garbage on people. And and I just think a lot of the writing right now puts a lot of garbage on youth workers and on youth ministry. And yep. I just think there's cultural issues at play that are way bigger. And there's certain battles that we just do not have to fight. I think the whole kingdom of God picture that Jesus paints is not that we are about causes and fighting big battles and maintaining power, but we just individually love and care for the little individual seeds. And then God does whatever he's going to do, you know?
Yeah. Hey, that's my, I have a ringtone for Christmas time, and it's the Harry Connick Jr. Must Have Been Old Santa Claus. And so of course my dad decides to call me today.
No, I love that. You even gave him a shout out this morning. And, that's it's funny, is we may be the same era, but my, my favorite go-to Christmas, sounds are, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC.
Oh, yes. I'm going to have to go listen to that now. So, well, Ben, this was a great post. Again, you always got great stuff on your blog. Again, everyone, I want you to – I'll have the link in the show notes. It's called Own Our Rumspringa. I think it's a great one to process. And again, Ben, share with them how people can connect with you, because I'm sure if they have questions, I don't want them coming to me, because you wrote the piece, you have all the brains. Where can they connect with you?
Well, I don't have any answers. I just like to commiserate over a nice drink, and that's about it. So, but I'm always happy to commiserate, because I think loving students is the best calling on the planet, and they're is equally heartbreaking, and we just need people to carry that heartbreak together. But you can always check out my blog, Average Youth Ministry. Email me, BenjaminKearns@gmail.com, or you swipe left on Tinder.
Whoa, hey there.
Or is it swipe right? I forget which way.
Yeah, I don't know what it is either. I don't do those kind of apps there, Ben. What are you talking about?
Oh, I thought that was just an evangelism tool. I'm sorry.
It definitely is. this ties in really good with your book too, From the Pen to the Palace. Briefly tell people where people can get that and what the Pen to the Palace is about.
Yep. It's on my blog. There's a little link right there at averageyouthministry.com. And it's just simply recognizing our culture is changing as kids have less and less connection to traditional Judeo-Christian worldview. We should probably rethink the language we use in the gospel and the environments we create in youth ministry that connect to a generation that has no sense of morality or personal responsibility and instant gratification and all the things that are there's some real struggles there, but classical evangelical Christianity just does not scratch those itches in the same way. So,
yeah, I read it. It's awesome. It's one of your best books that you've ever created there, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
It's great. And I'll include a link. We talked about that in depth as well. So I'll include a link in the notes as well on that. Well, Ben, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate having you on.
My pleasure, Tom.
All right, so really the question that comes out of it from this conversation with Ben and I, that comes out to me is, how are we going to be prepared for those students to come back? Are we going to be prepared? Or are we going to let our feelings of them walking away, or are we going to take it personally and say, they walked away from me, Tom Pounder, or they walked away from this leader, that leader? No, ultimately they're choosing to walk away from Christ. So are you prepared then for them to come back? And how do you respond to them when they do come back? I think that's the key concept here, because again, hopefully as they explore their faith, they're going to realize that Christ is everything. But unfortunately, like my instance with that one kid in particular, he said specifically, I'm going to party, I'm going to join a fraternity, and I'm going to get it with as many girls as possible. I mean, that's the reality. That's what some people do. You spend so much time and energy hanging out with them, but they will choose to walk away not because of you, but because of Christ. And they don't want Christ in their lives, but they still stay with you. I still stay in contact with that kid still. And we process life together still because I'm open. I think of it in a concept of a bigger picture of I'm walking through life with this guy. And this really is life. I've spent now basically 2 decades of my life with this one kid, still helping him process life. Are you prepared for that? Are you walking through life with kids that as they get into adulthood, they come back to you? And are you open to continue to process life with them? I hope you are. And so that's just the challenge, the thought for us as we move forward, especially into a new year. Who are you walking with? Who are you spending time with? And are you being prepared for people to come back to you and help continue to process life with them? Because they may not get it for another 2 decades, but they will get it, hopefully, one day. So that's the encouragement. That's the challenge there. And I'm curious, what do you think? What's going through your mind right now? Share it with me. Get in touch with me. Share it with me on Twitter at TA Pounder or hit me up on email, tom@ymsidekick.com. I would love to really hear your thoughts on this and what your perspective is. All right, heroes. Well, that wraps it up for another episode of the YM Sidekick podcast. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Again, as always, if you like it, share it with your friends, but also go to iTunes and subscribe to it. I've got fresh podcasts coming out each and every Wednesday. All right, heroes, well, I hope you have a great week and enjoy this time with your friends and your family as you get ready to kick off a whole new year. Have a great one, heroes.